Oh, Lord, it's hard to be humble when you're perfect in every way. Remember that line from the old Mac Davis song? But men, being humble is really being willing to accept the truth about ourselves. Hello, I'm Brian Patrick. Welcome to Crossing the Goal. We tackle some tough issues men might think about but don't talk about very much. We're continuing our series on the godly man, being humble, our topic this time on Crossing the Goal. We're kicking off our show on The Godly Man is Humble, this time on Crossing the Goal. Let's meet our Crossing the Goal team, a picture of humility himself, Peter Herbeck, the Vice President of Renewal Ministries from the Fellowship of Catholic University Students Focus. It's Curtis Martin and our coach, the former NFL coach and All-Pro wide receiver, Danny Abramowitz. And Peter, I guess if there were a picture next to the word humility in the dictionary, I think it should be of you.
Yeah, right. Humility is the first virtue. That's what the saints tell us, because it's the virtue that opens us up to all of God's grace. It's the virtue that opens us to faith, to believing, to receiving, to accepting Jesus' perspective about our condition, about sin, about salvation. So it's absolutely key.
It's really about being teachable, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It really is.
And I'm glad we got here because, you know, I've been waiting for something that I'm really good at. No, this is a very interesting topic, and I think it goes right to the heart of the cultural battle. There are two worldviews out there, and they're in direct opposition. And one of them says at the heart of it, it's the key for our happiness to reach self-actualization. And that's the worldview. The Christian view is that in order to reach meaning and purpose in life, we need to learn self-donation. And humility teaches us to live self-donation, to get outside of ourselves, that there are things, certainly including God, but other things, the church and other things, that are calling for us, they're greater than us, and that we can give ourselves to those, and when we do that, we find ourselves.
You know, it's difficult to be humble in this world, and especially in this country, because we're so affluent, we got so many things, and the world even out here telling me, go get more. It's so difficult not only to become humble, but to stay humble in this world. Yeah.
That's why this series is so important, because we're really dialing into what does it mean to be a man?
Yeah.
Well, God's ultimate man is Jesus Christ. Jesus shows us what authentic manhood is, and this humility is a fundamental characteristic of it all.
All right, Peter, you and Curtis will provide us with that game plan for humility right here on Crossing the Goal right after this quick timeout.
We've reached the game plan, and our topic is humility. Why does the godly man need to be humble? So if we're going to figure out why that's the case, we've got to break it down and see what the definition is. So when we talk about humility, Peter, what are we talking about?
Well, there's misconceptions about humility, first of all, that it means thinking badly of yourself, thinking negatively about yourself. It doesn't mean thinking badly about yourself, it just means thinking less of yourself. Not thinking about yourself so much, but thinking about others instead of yourself, kind of getting outside yourself. There's the root for the word humble is humus, which means earth, of the earth, being lowly and being touched with the reality of who I am, not some illusion of who I am, but being touched with the truth of who I am.
But also recognizing that we are earth, but we're earth that's been enlivened by the breath of God. And so
absolutely,
there's a dignity to it. So it's not, as you said, just thinking less of ourselves, but thinking about where we've come from, God, and where we're going, God. Yeah. And that provides destiny for us, and yet it's all about Him and less about us.
But humility as a virtue, though, is it's a radical revolution. I mean, up until Jesus, really, humility was considered a weakness. The ancients didn't honor it as a great virtue. Now go to Philippians 2, is the classic passage where we see the value and the meaning of humility. Here's Paul exhorting all of us. He says, do nothing out of selfishness or conceit, but in humility count others better than yourselves. Let each of you look not only to your own interests, but also to the interests of others. Have this mind among yourselves, which is yours in Christ Jesus, who though he was in the form of God, he did not count equality with God something to be grasped, but he emptied himself, taking on the form of a servant, being born in the likeness of men, and being found in human form, he humbled himself and became obedient unto death, even death on a cross.
spectacular. As you said, the ancients nailed many of the virtues. They saw them, insights. But right. this is one that completely skipped them. And Christ yeah. comes and reveals something completely new about man, that yeah. we really have a completely new identity. And we stand at a crossroads where the world has a perspective of who we ought to be. And most of us have drunk deeply from that perspective, whether we realize it or not. I mean, all yeah. you need to do to think like the world is get up.
Yeah.
And then you do.
Right.
Or you can allow your mind to be transformed by the renewal through prayer, the reading of the scriptures, and beginning to put on the mind of Christ to yeah. think about things differently. And then all of a sudden, humility becomes the foundation stone of every other virtue.
Right. And you see Paul saying, now, put this in your mind. Think about yourself this way. Look at what Jesus did. He was the model. Jesus decided to condescend. Jesus bowed down, and love was moving him. Humility allowed the Lord to express concrete love, which was to leave his authority, his reign, his dominion, his power, and he became one of us in order to save us. He didn't come with all the trumpets blasting and say, everybody look at me, I'm it, come and see me. He emptied himself, becoming one of us. Why? Because love was moving him. Humility allowed him to empty himself, to do the deed of love, which rescued and saved us.
And think about that. The problem with us when we get prideful, we think we're the center of the universe. The issue is, though, Jesus actually is the center of the universe,
yeah.
and he was still humble.
Yeah.
And so he's really showing us how to behave. And James says this in James chapter 4, verse 6, a very challenging passage for me because I'm not as humble as I let on at the beginning. It says...
really?
Yeah, no, not really. He says, God is opposed to the proud, but gives grace to the humble.
Yeah.
So there's this principle at work that says that God will oppose the proud even if they're right.
Yeah.
Because humility is that important. And so we have to recognize, if we want to be successful by whatever that means, in other words, be faithful to Christ, to live in response to God's grace, then the beginning, the first step is humility, even more so than yeah. you know, really thinking we have all the answers, which is, of course, also yeah. very important.
Yeah, related to that, Curtis, is that whole theme in the scripture, the humble will be exalted and the exalted will be humbled. The proud are going to be brought down. I mean, Mary talks about it in her Magnificat. I mean, that's really what's gone on. The human heart has exalted itself against God. We've inflated ourselves. We've deflated the image of God. I was thinking of Romans 1. Paul talks about that the pride that's in the human heart. He says, for the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all the ungodliness and wickedness of men who by their wickedness suppress the truth. He said, in the human heart is a pride that says, not thy will be done, but my will be done. There's a drive in us to suppress the truth about God's sovereignty and authority over our lives. We want to be radically independent. We want to live the way we want to live, call all the shots in our life. Paul goes on to say, what we refuse to do is to honor God as God and to give him thanks. Jesus came to show every human being what it meant for a human being to honor God and to give him thanks with their life.
I go back to this worldview because really this is the foundation stone. When we talk about humility being the first virtue, it's the first step in a pursuit of God. And we really have to think about things radically yeah. differently. We really stand, at more than any other topic we've looked at, in complete opposition to the way the world approaches things when we talk about humility. Listen to what St. Paul says in Colossians. He says, see to it that no one takes you captive through philosophy and empty deception according to the tradition of men. Now, he's not criticizing philosophy or tradition. It's empty philosophies yeah. and the tradition of men as opposed to the tradition that comes from the apostles. What we need to recognize is there's two ways of looking at the world. And if we get this wrong, we start down a path that leads to destruction. And if we get this right and we begin to see ourselves properly, who are we? Why are we here? These yeah. are fundamental questions that lead us to a position of humility and then puts us in a place where we can receive God's blessing.
I mean, yeah, you've nailed it, Curtis. I think this is the fundamental battle in our time. More and more voices are saying, for me to be free, I have to have, you know, total autonomy. I have to name my own, you know, the meaning of my life. I have to self-create. And God becomes a rival. God stands in the way of my absolute independence and my autonomy and being my own creator and my own maker, my own master. That's a lot of the fight that's on. It goes right to the heart. There's nothing new under the sun. It happened in the garden, but it's happening now as well.
And when we get this right, we understand that God has your best and my best, all yeah. of our best at heart. We can trust him. Brian?
Thanks for the game plan, Curtis and Peter. Coach, being humble is really a goal of mine, but I think I'm still on my own 5-yard line. Now you're about ready to move into the red zone.
I just hope you guys don't humble me too badly.
We'll try not to.
Yeah, exactly.
We're in the red zone next on Crossing the Goal, but first, a quick timeout.
Let's go, Coach.
We're in the red zone on Crossing the Goal, talking about humility as our Godly Man series continues. And Danny Abramowitz, as a former saint, it's got to be tough for you to be humble.
Yeah, but especially now we got the Super Bowl victory down.
You know, I'm watch out.
I knew it all the way.
That was all you're doing.
Jumping on the bandwagon. Yeah, your Vikings got this. Yeah. No, but everyone talks about the Saints now, and it's great. But that team was a team of destiny. That team is incredible. People just see the surface of that team. But I got to talk to Sean Payton and a couple of the coach there. Sure. That team, from the very beginning, back when Katrina hit and they had to move out of town, when they came back, they got involved in the community and they promised that city that they were going to bring a title to that town. And not only did they bring the title to the town, because when you win a Super Bowl, you can start pounding your chest and stuff like that, and rightly so in a certain manner. But if you look at the character of those guys, they got involved with the community, the coach, the leader in that Super Bowl, a great Super Bowl, I think one of the best played Super Bowl. Both coaches, humble guys, no controversy, no guys standing out causing chaos, you know, the quarterbacks, humble, great guys. And Drew Brees is a leader, a guy of character, a humble guy. What did he have when they showed him the award? He won the MVP and the Super Bowl. Did he raise up the trophy? No, he raised his son up with tears coming down his eyes. And I know people in that community, those guys, those players, those coaches, that whole administrative staff got involved in that community, the humbleness of that team. I think that's why it ended up being, Brian, the highest rated television show of all time. I think it was because the people saw the character and the humility of that team.
Go ahead.
I think it started with you.
Yeah, well, actually, the humiliation started back then. You see, when you're talking, I just keep thinking of those same days where the fans were wearing bags over their heads. You remember that? Yeah. But those were very humbling days, weren't they? The whole franchise went through years and years of that stuff. And then to point out the quality that's in some of these guys, we read Philippians 2, become a servant. Humility means being a servant, not counting yourself better than other people. And that's what they did. They were servants in their community. That's what you pointed out. It's great.
You talk about two great quarterbacks, and you know, but it was your quarterback's son on the other team, Peyton Manning.
Exactly.
And I would imagine it had to be very gratifying for him to watch his son play in a Super Bowl and his team. I mean, it's a win-win on both sides.
And he called me, Archie called me about a week before the Super Bowl, and here his son, both of his sons have won Super Bowls and MVPs in Super Bowl, and his other son was in the other one. He and I never had a winning season in all the years. He played 12 years and I played 8. That's called being humbled.
I know. He told me if you wouldn't have dropped so many balls, you guys would have had a shot.
Exactly. No. Drop about 100 to catch up for all those.
But don't you think humility gets a bad rap? I don't think we really understand what humility means. And we talked about humiliation. It really isn't humiliation. Humiliation can lead to that. Yeah. But it's really being honest with ourselves about who and what we really are so we can become what God made us to be.
It's this shocking realization that he's God and I'm not.
Yeah.
We have to choose to accept the benefit of the humiliation. In fact, St. Therese says that no humility comes without humiliation, but many, many humiliations happen and we don't take advantage of it. We don't learn from it. We don't humble ourselves in light of, humiliation is just the glaring awareness that we weren't as great as we thought we were.
Yeah.
And God's always known that. But he desires to bless us, not because we're great, but because he loves us. That's the foundation stone of our relationship with him.
And to be able to see myself as a creature with dignity, that God has created me. I'm not God, and I'm not better than anybody else around me. I might be smarter, I might be better looking, I might be wealthier.
All those things.
All these kinds of
which makes it hard for you to be humble.
But all those things, we often use the gifts God's given us to want to elevate ourselves over other people.
Yes.
We want to look down at the herd, like, I'm not like those people. I'm different. I'm more special than they are. And what Jesus is showing us here, the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords comes and he becomes one of us and he washes our feet. And he shows us the value of who we are and recognizes the dignity of our neighbor, of one another.
And humility comes in various forms. It comes in the form of obedience. It comes in the form of suffering. It comes in various forms like that so that we can grow from that. Service is another one, that we step out of ourselves and this stuff. The suffering thing could occur in our own life, not only suffering that we have in our own particular life, whatever it is, an illness or a tragedy within the family, something happens, loss of a job or something like that, you get humbled many times. I'm learning a lot right now. My dad's suffering, and to see a man, a strong, healthy, vibrant man, relegated to the form of Harley, even, you know, that he needs us to help him, he needs other people to serve, and he just to go reach for his milk or something like that to take a drink, it's difficult for him. And he's laying there, and I'm just thinking, I'm learning from, it's got to be humbling to my dad, but it's also, it's humbling for me to be able to serve me and my wife and to be a part of it, to see it.
I mean, that whole process of aging and dying and all that, it's very humbling. And what it does, though, is it puts us in touch with reality. The reality is that sin is real. Yeah. And that, you know, through sin comes death, and we're dying, and we're not self-sufficient. We didn't make ourselves. We can't save ourselves. We're radically dependent on God. And then we begin to see, if we see that truth, that I'm not God, and I'm not, I don't have the power, I recognize, even though I'm going to go through all that hardship, someone greater than it all, who swallowed it all up in victory, is going to rescue me from it. He's going to save me from it. But it depends on my acknowledging the reality of my condition. And that's where humility comes
in. Jesus says we're supposed to become like little children. And when you look at a child, they're aware of their dependence. They're shorter than everybody. They need to be carried. Everything needs to be taken care of for them. And I know in our families, I look at our 8 children, and there's a certain sense in which the younger children are dependent upon everybody else in the family. Yeah. And I think that breeds that sense of childlikeness that Christ is pointing towards, that he wants us to continue to have that attitude towards the Heavenly Father, who is always providing for us. But as we grow up and become men, we have this false sense of self-sufficiency. We couldn't take our next breath if God wasn't allowing us to.
So as adult men, we're not supposed to be childish, but we should be childlike
absolutely,
when it comes to humility.
And humility really is the breaking of the delusion, or the illusion that I'm self-sufficient, that I'm powerful, that I'm almighty, that, you know, my stuff doesn't stink, you know, and all that, that everybody should serve me. I'm not in a position being a servant. And this is why, you know, Nietzsche and the philosophers, they rejected, they hated this about Christianity. They're more like, no, that's the powerful are going to rule, and the powerful are going to dominate the weak. And Jesus said, that's a total delusion. You're all weak. You're all broken. You're all creatures. And it's your sin that's driving you there. And Jesus, that's why Jesus showed us a whole nother path, you know?
And to me, I see a lack of humility out here, because a lack of obedience. You know, the Lord tells us this is the way to go. This is the way. And we know we want to do it our way, and we get away from that. Mm-hmm. When you look at, that's why I've always admired John the Baptist, the humility of him. When it's not like he didn't have his own following. He had a pretty good following there. And when Jesus come, what did he say? Not me. Yeah. This is the,
he must increase, I must decrease.
Do you think, though, there's a trap, false humility of, you know, kind of trying to be humble or putting ourselves down, hoping that someone will say, oh, no, you're much better than that, you know?
Yeah.
You think that could be a trap?
The pity pod type thing.
I mean,
well, that's not really humility.
I mean, it can be, but there's enough in life that'll help us on a day-to-day basis find humility. I mean, just trying to make Jesus our aim to please God. Forgiveness. You were talking earlier about things like obedience. But what about forgiveness?
Yes.
It's really hard for guys to seek forgiveness, to ask for forgiveness when you
humility.
Need it, because it takes humility. And those opportunities are right there. And if we respond to them, we'll grow in humility.
We also talked about earlier about accepting our mistakes and admitting that we did wrong.
Yeah.
You give me, I'll tell you, I was talking with my son Thomas, who is a wonderful guy. He's got a great sense of right and wrong. He's not perfect. He's a lot better than I was and that I am. But I had an opportunity to coach him as his dad, and I was heavy-handed. I barked at him a little bit more than I ought to have, and it became clear to me that I had really not done a good job. I wanted to communicate love and encouragement and coach, and what I had done is kind of shut him down and broken his spirit. And when I became aware of that, and then went and apologized to him and gave him the opportunity to hear that dad was wrong, dad knew he was wrong and was seeking his forgiveness, it put my son in a really wonderful position to be able to forgive me and strengthened our relationship. And it's the power to see that when we humble ourselves before our Lord, but before one another, that we really provides the framework. We're not as great as we want. And we as men tend to walk through our families, throwing elbows left and right, through temper tantrums or thoughtlessness, and we need to be more humble and ready to ask forgiveness.
That's really good. I was just thinking, Danny, you've shared this story, Brian, many times in AA, you know, your healing, your awakening came when you said, my life's unmanageable. I've made a mess of my life. You were honest. You were telling the truth. And now look what God's done with your life.
You know? Everything in recovery begins with humility. Until you're ready to admit that you're broken and beaten, nothing can happen. Once you admit that, miracles happen.
Yeah, exactly. It'll wear you out if you don't. I mean, just the idea of that you think you can do it on your own.
Creating the illusion and keeping that all going, it's very fatiguing. It'll wipe you out. Yeah.
Okay, we're going to push into the end zone next. We'll get into our email bag, and each of these guys will get the last word on humility here on Crossing the Goal.
We've reached the end zone on Crossing the Goal. We're continuing our Godly Man series. This time, the Godly Man is humble. And this email from Greg and Carol in Wisconsin kind of ties into pride and humility. They say, "My wife and I know someone who is very proud and constantly brags about himself and his belongings. They recently came over for Christmas dinner, and all we heard about was how great he and his belongings are. Now, they say that they want to address this without starting an argument, and they don't want to see this man drifting away from God. Any advice?"
I think it might be worthwhile to have a conversation, maybe, you know, the husband or somebody at a discreet moment and quiet and just say, "Hey, I just noticed in our interchanges over the last time, a few times we've been together, you're talking a lot about what you've accomplished and what you've done, and we're really proud of you and what you've done, but we just want you to know it's you we care about, and it's not just what you possess, but who you are, you know?"
I agree with that. It's not about your possessions. It's about you as a person.
Mm-hmm. All right, so from Teresa in Manhattan, "How do I convince my active cradle Catholic husband to tithe? He won't watch the show or seek counsel. He thinks that since we already volunteer and give financially to our church, we have done our part."
You know, that's a great question, but I would say there probably is a question behind the question. Tithing finally is something that takes place within a relationship with the living God. We tithe, give the first 10% of our increase to God because we've come to trust Him. And so I think the first step is to continue to pray, as I sure you are, but also fast and give alms personally of your own. That will open up God's heart. That's what we're told in Matthew in the Sermon on the Mount, that these three acts, prayer, fasting, and almsgiving, open God's heart. As you do that, we'll pray together with you that your husband's heart is open to a relationship with God, and then he'll be open to tithing.
All right, and finally, an opportunity for all of us to be humble. Mike from Baltimore says, "I really like it when you guys wear coats rather than t-shirts on the show." He says, "The t-shirts make you look wimpy and washed out."
Wimpy? Come on. How about that?
Well, Mike, I appreciate the opportunity to experience a little humiliation here at your hands, and hopefully we'll grow in humility.
I thought he was talking about you two guys.
It's the white shirt. Yeah, there you go.
All right, the last word now on being humble, starting with Peter.
Thank you, Brian. Jesus tells us that the greatest among you shall be the servant of all. I want to challenge you, brothers, as you're watching the program this week, to think about how you might serve your wife better in this week.
The prophet Micah tells us the three things that reach out to God's heart. It says, "But to do justice and to love mercy and to walk humbly with our God." Humility is the foundation stone, as we've said before, and to be able to really trust that when we allow ourselves to be humble before God, it brings Him joy and draws us into relationship with Him.
Men, I want you to reflect on three people in the Scriptures. These people are the most humble of all time, I think. One, Mary. 2, Joseph. 3, Saint
John the Baptist.
Thanks, Coach Curtis and Peter. I'm Brian Patrick. The Godly Man is honest. Next time on Crossing the Goal. Oh Lord, it's hard to be humble when you're perfect in every way. I can't wait to look in the mirror. I get better looking each day.
My name is Dan Abramowitz. I'm with the New Orleans Saints, and I play split end.
To know me is to love me. I guess I'm a heck of a man. Oh, Lord, it's hard to be humble, but I'm doing the best that I can.
I'm going to do self-actualization versus self-donation.
And self-flagellation.
Yes, as opposed to self-flagellation.
Okay.
The guns are going to get you, buddy.